Hey there, it's Mike Tramp, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been, and it always will be.
Welcome to White Line Fever. New episode. My name is Dask, and I just wonder, like, growing up and now living in Switzerland, what are some of the big cultural differences that you have to encounter every day? And I'm sure it has. I guess we can hear some of them in your previous band Maida and your current band. They sound different, and that might reflect some cultural differences or at least musical differences as well. But are people in Switzerland more reserved? Are there things that parts of your behaviour you have to change when you go from one country to the next? What are some of the differences?
I think, as you said, I grew up between both countries, so I was kind of always a new kid in school, having to learn the, because when you're a kid, you learn a new language and then you forget the old one, right? And then you've got to relearn the old one again when you move back again. Because I really grew up kind of doing, 2-3 years in Australia, then again 2-3 years in Switzerland, and then back again, So it constantly kind of moving around, and so the cultural differences for me weren't that huge, really, But I suppose one of the huge differences, particularly in Switzerland, is that there are four languages here. If you imagine Switzerland's about the size of Tasmania, let's say, or maybe I think even a little bit smaller, and we've got four different languages just in that small space, right?
Yeah.
So you literally drive from one town to the next and you speak in French. I grew up in the French-speaking side, so I'm fluent in French. But I live actually in the German side now, in the Swiss-German side, so the German-speaking side of Switzerland. And I don't speak the language. I've been taking German lessons and I'm trying to learn, but I tell you, it's a bloody hard language to learn. But I live with my girlfriend, and she's Swiss German, so she's helping me a bit there as well, and trying to, But I've sort of been living here for a couple of years, and in the German part, and it'll take me a while. So I think the languages are a big part. And before that, I was living for a few years in the Italian speaking side of Switzerland. So it's just kind of, and they're all very different from one place to the next. I think, it's funny, in Australia, if you're in Melbourne or something, and you fly up, fly up to Queensland or something, which is, a lot of kilometres, and, you're talking and then you get off the plane and it's, you kind of get the, g'day, mate, how you going? It's a really big difference there. And probably, I'd say, people are maybe a little bit more reserved, I'd say, here. Actually, there are a lot of Australians in Switzerland. I live in Zurich, and apparently there's quite a big community of Australians here, which some friends of mine were telling me. So it's interesting.
And I guess Goddard are like a Powderfinger level band domestically. Would that be a fair, mainstream rock from a similar era?
The Gotthard's been, I've been in the band for 9, going on, soon 10 years, and they were already sort of had 20 years behind them already before I joined, and so they've always been, they're sort of the biggest, it's a mainstream band in Switzerland. It's probably the biggest rock band in the country, has been for a very, very long time.
And you wouldn't normally draw a connection between Powderfinger and AC/DC. So as an overseas observer, we would say that you're kind of in Crocus's legacy or Crocus's kind of lineage. But I guess domestically, does the domestic crowd make that connection? Is rock, smelly black t-shirted rock, big in Switzerland, or do you kind of sit apart from that because you've been mainstream for so long? So you're not really, your fortunes aren't connected to rock's fortunes per se. Same as Cold Chisel, for instance, Goodfellas Stadium in Australia, whether rock is big or not. Is it, what's that connection?
Yeah, it's kind of similar. I mean, even though we are considered mainstream, but the main reason why I would say that we're considered mainstream here in Switzerland is because, I mean, you know, we're in the newspapers, we're in the magazines, we're on TV, where, you know, this sort of stuff. So mainstream in that sense, but actually musically, honestly, rock is not big on radio. So radio in general, I think that's kind of around the world, really. I mean, mm-hmm. Rock is not it's not mainstream in terms of radio, but in terms of everything else, I would say, yeah, we are. But it's really interesting, but because the rock scene doesn't kind of need.
No, not anymore.
Big mainstream radios, you know, because, I mean, you can, I mean, all the rock bands are filling our stadiums. All the, you know, the big guys that are around, they're still doing it, and I mean, I don't know when's the last time I even heard a Guns N' Roses song on the radio, you know, even here, and I mean, they're selling out stadiums. You know, you got Rammstein, all this stuff, you know, a lot of. I mean, there's a huge in Europe. There's such a huge. Movement still going, you know, rock is still, you know, really alive, and I mean, there's so many festivals all throughout Europe, and they're all rock festivals. I mean, you know, most of them are all rock, you know, and big, like, you know, big stuff. So
yeah,
so it's all very well alive. It's just maybe not on your, you know, typical commercial big radio stations. You know,
are Crocus revered in Switzerland like we imagine from the outside they would be, or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a complete. We're really good buddies with them, with those guys as well, and they're definitely they're part of the, you know, the legends of Switzerland.
I think they gave me tinnitus on the Monsters of Rock about 5 years ago. Monsters of Rock cruise. Let's have another song.
All right, let's go for a song. Let's go for another last time.
Baby, just a- Danko Jones, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to the show, and I think we've been dancing around this band for about 3 or 4 years trying to get someone on the show, and it's pretty much been my fault that we never got around to it. But finally, from Burnout Rec, we've got Gary Mote. How are you, Gary?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Mate, I guess, you know, strange times, but I just had a look at your Facebook page, and you do have some gigs now booked. Can you tell us a little bit about the band's journey over the last sort of 4 months? What's it been like?
Well, at the beginning of the year, we managed to get 3 gigs in up until we get closed down in March, second week of March, obviously, over here it was. And we played a couple of gigs up in Scotland in February, and they were fantastic, like, you know, and we had a great time. At the time, our lead guitarist Adrian left 2 days before we travelled up to Scotland, because we live in England, like, and he quit the band for, I don't know, reasons only known to himself, you know. Sort of dropped us in it, really, and our other guitarist Miles just stepped up and said, right, great, I'll play lead. We'd never heard him play lead before, because he's a rhythm guitar player. and we just went, and the audience loved it, and nobody even said, where's the other guy, you know? So we thought, well, fair enough then, you know, so we just cracked on, and we thought everything was going good until, obviously, we get closed down, as I say, and so since then we've just spoken on the phone a few times, and everybody's just waiting to see what happens here, you know, and when we can get back out live, if at all. And you know, the way things are going, I don't see anything happening until 2022 personally myself. So
really, wow.
I know we've got gigs booked, and everybody's hoping that something may happen, but I suppose they've got to have the venues booked just in case it happens, haven't they? So, and the band's booked up. So, it's a difficult one the world over, obviously. Everybody's, the music industry's screwed, you know?
Yeah. Mate, obviously we can go back to the pub now. I'm in London, so we can go back to the pub now, and live music, I guess someone standing in the corner with an acoustic guitar, that probably isn't too far away. What do you think the big hurdles are for actual gigs? Is it just making them profitable, fitting enough people in the room? Is that the big hurdle you see?
People in the room, I think, you know, it's whether people have got, I know there's people going out there and doing crazy things, you know, and taking to the streets and protests and stuff. But, you know, I don't think that in general people are going to have the confidence to get back in the room with everyone as yet, you know. And these things are still alive in the world, and it's not just the fans, but it's the bands as well, and the band's families, you know. Does everybody want people to go and do that, you know, and feel safe with it, you know? So it's a big ask.
Yeah, yeah. I guess with the sort of music that we're into, a lot of the guys in the bands are getting, and I'm not spring chicken myself, so it's an extra factor, isn't it? If it was like a dance act and everyone's 19, your kind of thinking's a little bit different, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, that's I have the same thought in my head, you know. I mean, the audience are old, we're old. You know, you know, we're the people who think about it, you know, not, as you say, not the young ones. They don't give a monkeys, you know.
Mate, new album, This Is Hell, just came out at the end of last year. What's it done to the band as a business? You know, like, obviously, I know you don't earn a lot of money from CD sales or streaming or anything, but the band as a business must be just gone. I mean, you know, like what's it actually done to what you would, you know, to your promotion and the functioning of the band, you know?
Well, I mean, luckily, you know, I've got my wife and manager Claire and Judith Fisher, PR, and they're constantly hot on the case and social media, really, you know, so they'll keep promoting it. I mean, I'm doing an interview now with yourself, and I've done, I think I've done about 4 this week,
yep.
You know. you know, the album sales is going well at the moment. I can tell you that it seems to be South America that's buying the album at the moment.
Wow.
You know, which is a new territory, really, and we've been doing some promotional work there. So it's kept going, but obviously if we were out playing live and there was more happening, it would be obviously bigger and better. But, you know, I'm not grumbling, I'm not complaining, because during what's going on in the world, you know, we're taking over nicely, like, you know, as a band for the album, this is hell.
And mate, before we go to our first song, Adrian, since this happened, there's been no communication. He hasn't asked to come back.
No, he decided to leave, and there's no turning back for me. You know, it's just that's the way it is. We have another man waiting in the wings for when we come back. He was supposed to play with us back in May. We were supposed to be supporting the treatment in Nuneaton and the Queen's Hall in Nuneaton, and that was going to be his audition kind of gig, and that got blown out of the water. So he sat there going, pulling his hair out, you know.
Can you give us a name?
No, not yet, no.
Okay. If you can't give us a name, give us a song. What can we play?
Oh, well, Downtown and Blues, then.
Yes. Thank you.
is Gary Moore, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program, and we especially a big welcome to our guest, Chuck Billy from Testament. How are you, Chuck?
Great, man. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Now, you're doing a lot of press at the moment, and I don't think people need to think too carefully to figure out what you're getting asked about in every single interview, because you did have coronavirus and you have recovered from it. How do you feel about talking about it? Does it bring back bad memories? Do you feel like you're sort of doing the community a favor by warning about the dangers? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I like talking about it because there's so much unknown and there's a lot of information out there for people. You know, it's been around for longer than we've thought. It's not, you know, people I've talked to have been sick and go, wow, maybe I had that a few months ago when I was really sick for 3 weeks, you know. Mm. Yeah, so, I mean, I like talking about it just because it is definitely serious, because I see on the internet people like, oh, it's a hoax, or is it real, or, you know, this and that. And it's like firsthand, yeah, it is real. It's no joke.
Yeah. You're in the Bay.
I feel for the older people because I was wiped out for 2.5 weeks, and I could imagine somebody who has health issues or an older person, man, I could see them like having a hard time making it.
Yeah, yeah. You're in the Bay Area. I know you've spoken, and maybe about a week ago in some interviews, you talked about the public weren't taking it very seriously. Do you feel the message is sort of getting through now?
Well, I mean, I see on the news maybe a little bit, but we've had to take extra measures. I know our governor had to shut down the state parks and beaches because people weren't, especially the younger generation, they were just all at the beach, no social distancing. It's like, come on, you guys are supposed to be distancing and isolating. Everybody's just running to the beaches and parks. Mm. So, you know, people aren't doing the right thing, and you know, they keep trying to warn people, but, you know, they just don't get it, especially they're out doing their thing, and if they bring it home to a family member that's got problems, you know, that's not good, so.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed, just doing a little bit of research before, you know, you and your wife were okay until you got back to the US, but Will Carroll's been doing some interviews, and he says he had it over there, and he knew he had it, and he said people were sick on their bus. Were you aware that they were all quite ill when you were on tour?
No, you know, because it was the last 3 days, I think he said, of the tour. But no, we didn't. He didn't say he was sick, or had it, or thought he had it. But you know, I think he should have said something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. You know, I don't think it was cool. I mean, he could have got stuck in Europe for a long time, and with his problems, he could have been on a ventilator in Europe. Mm. But, you know, again, you know, him thinking he was ill just to get on that plane and just spread it himself if he was contagious, you know, that's kind of a little wrong.
Yeah. Have you spoken to those guys since? Obviously, he's been in a really bad way, hasn't he?
Just text. We text each other.
Yeah. Can you just another thing I wanted to ask you. This is a big question, I think, Chuck. Do you think you are now immune because you've had the disease once or not?
I don't know that. I mean, they're assuming that, and I keep watching doctors talk about it. They as of now, they think that possibly that's the case. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, I don't think they have any cases yet, you know, but I think everybody's going to really get relaxed and get back to normal. But once they figure out, and I know they're coming up with a test that's going to test people to where it'll tell you if you're had it, like in the past, if you've had the sickness and you beat it, which you might be immune, or if you've never had the illness and all those bad flus that you thought might have been it really wasn't. And those are the people that got to be cautious, you know, and wear the more masks and be social distancing. So until we get to that point where people are confident that they don't have it and maybe they're immune, they kind of get back to normal, you know, go back to work and do normal things again.
Yeah. We'll move on from your health after this one more question, and we'll have a song as well after this. But do you, you would have gone over this in your mind a few times. Do you have an idea of where you caught it, who you caught it off, what the circumstances were? Do you remember a certain incident or a certain...
I don't, but, I mean, you know, I mean, being the band, we're amongst ourselves, the three bands. We really didn't, like, walk through the crowds or nothing. So we're isolated ourselves. So, I mean, if Will did get it sick, maybe it was that last hug on stage, that last show when Will was around us all. I don't know if they were saying he was, if he thought he was really ill at that point. Because we didn't have a lot of public, you know, interaction with each other. It was mostly just all three bands and crews.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't know. I mean, we could have been that last night, or it could have been at the airport, because some of the people on the band and bus didn't get sick, you know, who slept in the same areas with us and were really close to us. So maybe we got it at the airport that last night, you know, maybe we got on the plane coming home. I mean, we just don't know. We just, you know, it's, we don't know.
Yeah. Okay, let's have a...
We all came down around the same time. I think if Will was sick first, they were sick first, maybe they must have gave it to us, I don't know, but the rest of our band and crew started feeling it like a day after we got home.
Okay, let's have a song. Let's cheer up. Have a song. What song can we play, Chuck?
Well, I think a brand new one off the album, which is appropriate, would be Symptoms.
Yeah, exactly.
Billy from Testament right here on White Line Fever.
Welcome back to White Line Fever, second part of our interview with Dylan Villan from The Wild. And you just played on the previous episode, actually, Nothing Good Comes Easy. And it was, you know, it's done with Keith Nelson from Buckcherry. And I just wondered, like, you know, your relationship with Keith, I was pretty surprised when he was no longer in the band. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, that relationship and how the song came together and what the inspiration was? I know you're a big fan of Power Age, the AC/DC album, and there's certainly some... I actually went through Power Age and tried to figure out which song on Power Age that's your song is most like. Can you tell us a bit about the song?
Yeah, Keith and I first met, I'm going to say 2014. Buckcherry... The original lineup of Buckcherry, I should say, they were really, really great for us. Really, really great for us in our early years. And they took a liking to us and brought us on the road in Canada and in America and things like that. And Keith and I just always really got along, you know. I like to think of him as like an older, more sober version of myself. but he's like a big brother that way, and he's always, you know, looking out for me. And I got home from Europe and I flew directly. I landed in Canada. I think I was home for a day, and I flew from Canada, from the West Coast here in Canada, to LA. And I landed, and, you know, Keith and I got together, and we had plans to just, you know, get in the studio and just see what could happen, see what we were doing. We hadn't seen each other in a while. And when we were coming into the studio that day, I remember he said to me, he goes, "So how you doing, man? You know, you've been really busy. How are you feeling?" And I just kind of looked at him and I just said, "Nothing good comes easy, you know?" And we went in the studio and we started writing and messing around on some other ideas, and nothing was really clicking that great for us. And I just said to him, I said, "Hey, what did I say to you when I came in, when we were walking in the door?" And he just looked at me and he kind of gave me this look and he said, "Nothing good comes easy." And we both had this moment, I think, where we knew, okay, well, that's going to be the tagline and the catchphrase of this song. And we started writing it and it came together really quickly. And it's kind of interesting. I kind of put that song on the back burner when I was writing the record for a while. I don't want to say I forgot about it, but I kind of forgot that it, all the potential that it had. And it wasn't until I got it in the room with my guys here in the Wild that we played it once through ourselves, and we knew right away that it was going on the record. And I just think it's a really cool song because it's such a blue collar working class saying, you know, like there's all those off the cuff things that people, everyday people say, like, it is what it is, nothing good comes easy. And those are the just kind of guys that we are. We've been raised to be, is just work hard, put your nose to the grindstone and dig deep and get it done. So that's kind of, you know, that's the story behind that one.
Did you find when you toured internationally that the audiences responded to different songs than in Canada?
Yeah, you know, I've always been really big on that, especially in Europe. You know, I feel that if you're a band that's, you know, sort of getting their legs or getting momentum, it's really important to pay attention to what's working beyond what you think is cool. You know, like you got to stay true to yourself and do whatever you want as an artist and as, you know, a rock and roller or a punk rocker or a blues player, whatever you are. It's really important to be, you know, true to yourself. But if you're making music and you've got, you know, a few different lanes that you're sort of running in on an album or as a band, where, you know, we kind of do this sort of sound and we kind of do that sort of sound, we've got elements of this, we've got elements of that, I think it's important to really pay attention to what's really working for your audience, what's working for your fan base, because they're all extensions of you. All those sides of that music is, you know, different pieces of you. So it's not as if you're catering in the sense of selling out or anything. It's just, I think it's really important to pay attention to what your audience is reacting to the most in a live show and really figure that out and run with it. And especially in Europe, you know, rock and roll is still such a, it's not fallen by the wayside as it has in ways in North America. So when we started going over there for our first time in 2016 with Airborne, you know, we really got hip to it and got right engulfed in the whole culture right away. And, you know, we've been going back 3-4 times every year ever since. And, you know, we're very lucky to be able to be doing that because we've been, you know, we've been introduced to a great rock audience that really loves its rock and roll, and we love giving it to them.
Okay, that's a great segue. Give us a song, maybe a song you think is going to go down really well in Europe.
Yeah, King of this is King of This Town by The Wild.
Welcome back to the final part of our interview with Cameron McKenzie from Horsehead, a band that I saw at Springfield many times, staggering out of there and into the sunlight on a Sunday morning. I just wondered, we've been talking about obviously the Reformation in the first part of the interview, and in the second part we talked about the career arc of the band. I guess the third thing would be to talk about why you broke up. You know, was it about changes in the music industry, like as to what people were listening to, or was it about personalities, or was it about legal and financial? What would you put it down to mostly?
Uh, think we just ran our course on an artistic level. We were very true to as we've said in earlier on in these podcasts, that we were very true to our art, and we only really followed our own hearts on that. And we made a lot of recordings, wrote a lot of songs, and we didn't really ever get to a point where we were going to have massive notoriety. It just, the universe didn't want to turn us into kind of a world dominating act. So financially, it's not like there's money there holding you. It's not like you're U2 and decide to break up for reasons, you know. It's just a run at court. And you go, okay, I'm tired. I've got nothing else to give it.
Yeah.
And our final record, Goodbye Mothership, was an all-in. It was all-in, emotionally and physically and intellectually. And you go, well, if that can't fly, then maybe we just got to move on and do something else. So that's what we did. Yeah, and, you know, so we just... Mick Valance one day said, oh, that was my last gig, and I went, good call.
What do you think the band, if, do you ever think, like, where you would have gone creatively had you stayed together? And that leads me into the other very obvious question that everyone is asking, I'm sure, is as to the question about new material.
Shy away from the fact that creatively we left no stone unturned. I mean, you listen from the start to the end of our material, it's like we go to a lot of places. And I don't think that we would have gone to some, you know, new fascinating place. It would have just kind of weaved along and kind of done its thing, and I think we said everything we were going to say. And I think that from the point of view of new material, that still stands to me. I mean, it'd probably be fun to write some new songs and stuff, but I don't know that there'd be a great amount of point in it. I don't know that we would do something that all of a sudden was more relevant, you know, or I think we would just kind of sound like more Hothead songs.
That's not a bad thing.
I love that attitude.
There are worse things. I guess a similar band might be, from 10 years before you guys, a similar band might be The Poor, for instance. Or Kings of the Sun, or they can't work full time for those bands, but they can do weekend touring. Although the Kings of the Sun have a problem is that the two brothers don't get on. But there isn't a full time job in it for you, but there's probably a future in it for you if you so desire. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there could be. But so desiring is really what we're talking about here. Scott tours with Screaming Jets. I tour with Mark Seymour and The Undertow and various musical things. It's not like without Horsehead we're not engaged in music. I suppose Mick's a bit different, Andy's a bit different, but he's got his own band as well. So we don't need Horsehead for our musical outlet. The motivation for this Horsehead activity is really just about making sure that we don't sort of, all of our material and our legacy doesn't kind of waft off into the ether and disappear. It's in one place.
Yeah.
And that's because we are very proud of it. There's some absolutely magnificent stuff there.
Yep.
And, I'd love for kids to be able to listen to it whenever, you know.
Karen, thanks very much for your...
I was just going to say, you know, the younger generation, there's people, you know, my son, kind of him and his mates, they say, this is fantastic, you know. So that's where it's at. People there's still something to be had for other generations, I think.
Look, I could ask 1,000 questions, but I'm not going to. Even though this is the last interview, we could technically talk all afternoon. But I want to thank you for your time. I'm certainly really excited that you're back in some way. I'd love to see a show at some point. Welcome back. And keep reminding us about your legacy. Don't just remind us once. Let's have another song.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, thanks very much for having me. It's been great to chat, and yes, I'll try and keep reminding you. why don't we go out with the one song that Triple J actually did play from Horsehead, and that is Chief Fell to Work.
White Line Fever, going around land down under, going to turn around the corner way down yonder, but I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever, and you get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever. Rock like fuck. That's what I say. Okay, come on down and rock on.